Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm a homeschooled father of five. We're raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado during the demise of Western civilization. And we are a safe distance from the demise out here, roughly 45 minutes outside of Denver, deep in the forest in my basement, broadcasting to 100 nations around the world about the very basic stuff, faith, family, and freedom in the 21st century. Trying to rebuild basic foundations in the minds, in the lives of hopefully hundreds of thousands of families around America and around the world. Dave Buhner also in studio with me. Just, you know, homeschooling fathers, which means we're taking advantage of our God-provided responsibilities and freedoms to do what we're supposed to do. And that is to direct the paideia of our children. That is the raising, the nurture, the education, the training, the discipleship. There's a lot of different words for what we're doing, but it's the father's responsibility according to Ephesians 6 and verse 4. Very, very important that parents understand their responsibilities. Without it, friends, you're looking at the decline of families and certainly the decline of education. Dave, you know, I appreciate the fact that we begin to see more mentorship. We begin to see more family economies. We begin to see more families engaged in the education of their children. I mean, that's all good news. That's all good news. But for some, they don't have much freedom. Here's a 17-year-old Houston honor student jailed for 24 hours. She missed too much school and apparently spent 24 hours in prison with a bunch of criminals. And she was sentenced for the 24 hours by Judge Lanny Moriarty. Sounds like the criminal. Yeah, it's the criminal in Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. And
apparently he's made it to the judgeship in Houston. So apparently this guy has jailed Diane Tran, an 11th grade honor student at Willis High School near Houston, 24 hours in jail and ordered to pay a $100 fine for excessive truancy. Here's the reason why she's not in school as much as they want her in school, Dave. She doesn't go to the daily jail as much as the experts want her to be there, and that is because she is working full-time at a dry cleaning business, part-time for a wedding planner, trying to support her brother and sister. Apparently her parents separated. She's working the family business. And then she tries to get a little bit in public school classrooms here and there, try to fit in, squeeze in a little bit of school here and there. She's an honor student. And, Dave, apparently the professionals that run these systems don't want anybody out there squeezing in a little family business on the side. It's just not going to work. Not going to work for the public school system, my friends. They're too busy messing up kids' lives everywhere. They're too busy creating the bad kind of culture and an education that doesn't fear God, and certainly an education that has really almost nothing to do with real life, because there's hardly any life integration left in American education in the present day. And apparently this girl actually was doing halfway decent with her academics, but she was also working on the side. And that's unacceptable for the present powers that be.
Well, Kevin, she was a threat to the social order, the social law order. You see, yeah. The social law order says that we have to warehouse all of our children until which time they can graduate from the high school and apply for government grants and food stamps and welfare and such. Here we had a 17-year-old Vietnamese girl who was actually working.
Yeah.
Now, if you let that example go, if the judge does not punish that, what could happen? Other children might get jobs and start working.
Yeah.
Other children might honor their parents and start working in order to provide for household economies. Other students might be challenged to be on the honor roll and not use the excuse they don't have enough time or life is so hard. Realize this. If she had been a prostitute or selling drugs or something, she probably wouldn't have served any time whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, and Dave, you probably wouldn't have 70% of young men not grown up by 30 years of age, up from 30% in 1970, if you have people out there working when they're 17, 18 years of age. I mean, you know, they're in the workforce. They're learning how to work. They're learning the character necessary to get a job and to keep a job. And, you know, that would be unacceptable for the present system, because why? The present system is in suicide, friends. We're doing everything we possibly can to break down our economies, to break down the social fabric of a nation, to create a nation where there is no family, there are no fathers, there is nobody really knowing how to work, and certainly you want birth implosions so that you get a huge, huge number of retirees in the year 2030 and nobody to work in the economy because they haven't been trained to work when they're 14, 15, and 16 years of age. Dave, let's just say it. The child labor laws are against God's law. The child labor laws, friends, is a relatively new addition. It is an imposition upon the jurisdiction of the family. And, you know, I just read the Communist Manifesto to our guys as we were doing the Shepherd Center this morning. And friends, the Communist Manifesto is very, very strong that families should not be putting their kids to work. That was very, very, very basic in Marx's Communist Manifesto. He says the family should not put the kids to work. In other words, he said, abolish the family. Get rid of the family business. These families have no prerogative whatsoever to keep their kids working. He says all these kids belong to the state, and ultimately what you want is an education that is social, not a home-based form of education. He says replace home education with social. That's the very, very heart and soul of the Communist Manifesto. Friends, that's where it all began. That's where it all began, maybe a little Jean-Jacques Rousseau on the side, but Karl Marx and his Communist Manifesto encouraging the modern systems to replace home education with social is exactly how we get to the point where a 17-year-old daughter can't work in her family business and she's put in jail for trying to do it.
Kevin, she's put in jail because she violated two of the social mores. First off, here she is 17 years old and working multiple jobs. As you say, you know, the child labor laws, they're against God's law. But we really don't want kids working. We've slanted the whole system to keep kids out of work. In fact, I read again that this year, this summer, is going to be one of the lowest employment rates for teenagers. They're just not jobs for them. And that's the way, of course, the system's designed.
The lowest in recorded history.
Right, because you have people with PhDs having to work at McDonald's now because there are no jobs for them there either. The other social moray that was violated is that she wasn't showing up for the socialist brainwashing. See, you can't brainwash children if they don't show up for the therapy. If they don't do their time in the prison, how are you going to capture their minds? You think you can capture their minds if they skip, oh, say, 10 days of the semester. It takes an awful lot of effort, a repeated giving of this message in order to capture these minds. You got to do it for all those years, all those hours, or the kids might think for themselves.
And let me remind you, my friends, compulsory attendance laws did not exist for 5,847 years of world history until the first state of America, I think it was Massachusetts, might have been Kansas, incorporated the compulsory attendance law into the state. And, of course, by 1913, I believe it was, every state around America had incorporated the compulsory attendance law. Friends, this is a relatively new socialist impingement upon the jurisdiction of the family. This is relatively new. Did not exist for 5,847 years or whatever it was. It was a long, long, long time before this happened. It only came after Jean-Jacques Rousseau and the Communist Manifesto, which was in 1848. I think, Dave, it was 4 years after the Communist Manifesto that the first state, Massachusetts, incorporated the compulsory attendance law. And the whole basis was this. The children apparently had left the family economies, and certainly the fathers had left the family's economies during the Industrial Revolution. At that point, the children were turned over to the corporations. The corporations ultimately determined the child labor situation, and after that, the corporations turned the children over to the government. The governments have owned the children by way of the compulsory attendance laws and the child labor laws since the 1840s and 1850s. That's pretty much the way it's happened, friends. The children used to belong to family economies. The children used to be feeding their father's sheep and feeding their father's goats, and it was David and Rachel and Rebecca and Joseph and others were feeding their father's sheep. For 6,000 years that happened. You had family economies going on. Aquila and Priscilla, they were tent makers. These were family economies until the modern age, where children were enslaved to the corporations. Eventually, they were enslaved to the governments. And now, of course, we're moving our women off to the corporations, and they will soon be completely owned by the government by means of socialist medicine and other programs. The governments are controlling more and more of the corporations in order to gain absolute control over our women and our children, and the end result will be the father will be completely irrelevant and obsolete to the modern age. That's because the family economy was dissolved by the communists, by the socialists, and by the capitalists. Hey, it was the hearts of men that did what they could to dissolve the family economies, and they started dissolving it in the first part of the 1800s. And that pretty much broke up the family, and that's where we are today with a busted up family, a fatherhood that is pretty much obsolete, and family economies that are busted to pieces. Well, I'm here saying there's just a couple of dads in America saying thus far and no further. Couple of dads in America still saying we are going to fight for everything we've got for family economies. And I know we're having a hard time with this. I'm having a hard time convincing my own friends of this. Friends, I mean, this is not going to be easy. Because we are utterly and thoroughly dominated by communism and socialism, by Marxism, and of course by the capitalistic dreams of dissolving family economies right and left. But evidently there was one honor student in Houston that was doing what she could to maintain something of a family economy and provide for her family.
Kevin,
17 years of age, she was trying to do this.
At the risk of going to jail myself, I'd like to point out that I have some sons who have missed more than 10 days of school. We homeschool, you
You're
see.
You're kidding me.
And so,
more than
like,
10 days.
Like my oldest son, for instance, he's sometimes busy working his business, and he's trying to work another business. He's actually trying to work two businesses. Mm-hmm. And then he missed a lot of time because he was helping other people, you know, serving the Church of Jesus Christ. Like the other day, just yesterday, he missed a whole day of school because he was helping a family move out of their house who had to be out of their house because their house was closing, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I couldn't be happy that he's missing all these days of school. No, I'm delighted that he's missing. Why am I sending him to school? I think it's so he can operate businesses and help people.
I thought that's what the whole purpose of school is about. Yeah, life integration, hardly a part of the modern educational philosophy, friends, hasn't been a part of the humanist Greek model for a long, long, long time. But the Bible presents a life integration model for the education of a child. If you hear the word, you don't do it, you're like the man who looks himself in the mirror and straightway forgets what manner of man he was. James chapter 1, very, very clear. The Bible says you've got to get the kids involved, engaged in real-life activities. You've got to plug knowledge into something. Otherwise, you get a knowledge that puffeth up and a knowledge that doesn't really provide much usefulness. Well, friends, I'm here to say that we've got to get a different theory of education, a different theory of family economies, a different approach to the way we do things in the modern age. And yes, we're fighting these compulsory attendance laws big time. Dave, I don't know what it is in Texas. This girl is 17 years of age. She should have been beyond the compulsory attendance law. She would be, I think, here in the state of Colorado. It used to be 7 to 16 in this state. It was brought into 6 to 17 over the last several years. So right now, I guess, you know, for everybody who sends their kids to public and private schools, it's 6 to 17 in this state. But homeschoolers were exempted on those restrictive laws over the last several times that they were pushed through the legislature here in Colorado. It's still, to this point, it's 7 to 16 for the average homeschooler in the state of Colorado. There's some nuances to that. You want to check out the law. But in Colorado, if you're 16 years of age, you're beyond the compulsory attendance law in our state. And you should not have to go to jail for working your family business at 17 years of age in the state of Colorado. Okay, that's the way it works here in the state of Colorado. But we'll be back in just a moment to talk a little bit more about what's going on in the public schools and how they're failing to teach, you know, useful stuff, like things about the American historical record. Be back in just a moment.
Rocky Mountain Super Conference on the Family is coming to the Denver Merchandise Mart June 14 to 16. This conference, sponsored by Christian Home Educators of Colorado, is designed to encourage and equip families through seminars on home education, family discipleship, worldview, vision, and parenting. Visit the exhibit hall featuring 200 vendors, including youth entrepreneurs. Stop by the used curriculum sale. Bring the whole family Friday night for the family film night featuring works by award-winning Christian filmmakers. Come to the Rocky Mountain Super Conference on the Family, June 14 to 16. Register today. Save on pre-conference pricing. For more information, go to check.org. That's CHEC.org.
And we're back on the Generations Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson, homeschool dad of five. And we're raising our children out here in Eastern Plains of Colorado in a family economy. And yes, we homeschool. Yeah, my children do the books. But they do other stuff. They don't just do books. They plug the books into stuff. They do things. And they're part of the family economy. Everybody works in our household. And they team up and they accomplish some wonderful things. We've got so many projects going on in this house, I can't keep track of all of them. So family economy is very, very, very important. We got to keep that. Keep that vision going. And oh, by the way, if you want to be part of our family economic conferences in 2013, we got one coming in Seattle, Washington. I believe that's in April. And then in May, we're going off to St. Louis, Missouri in 2013 to do family economic conferences. We're talking about thousands and thousands of people in Seattle and St. Louis coming down. And we're going to be talking about all aspects of family economies And we're bringing in people who have actually done it. We'll have lots and lots of panels. And we'll talk about this revolutionary concept. It's not revolutionary because it was done for 5,900 years until the modern age. But we think it can come back. And we think that people with faith, people who really want to struggle, people who really want to engage these things will be successful in bringing this about. Now, you can't do it without faith. You can't do anything without faith. So it's going to take some faith. And we want fathers with faith who can assume some faith to put together some economies that may be tough to engage. And it is tough to engage an economy against all the capitalistic and communistic forces that have been against us for the last 150 years of American history. Yes, this is extremely difficult to do. It will take a lot of faith on the part of fathers to pull this one off. But I still want to encourage people to the family economic vision. Personally, I don't think there are any options. I think you need to engage it because the future economy is going to require it. All right. Well, Dave, what's going on in the public schools today? Here's a Newsweek magazine article. Apparently, they did a survey of 1,000 Americans. It was a citizenship test. I guess this is the citizenship test they give everybody who wants to be a citizen of the United States. Huge percentage of American citizens failed the citizenship test.
It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a president who thinks there's 57 or 58 states.
Yeah. So maybe he should take the test.
Well,
or maybe he hasn't taken the test.
Maybe he's not a citizen.
Well, that's a good point. I haven't thought about that. Have you asked him?
Well, some people have.
Okay. What do you say?
He provided a PDF layered document and said, see?
Okay. Okay, so that's the president. So here's the way the rest of America goes on this. One-third of Americans can't tell when the Declaration of Independence was adopted. Well, that's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it?
Adopted?
Yeah. This Declaration of Independence was adopted in what year? Rough guess.
1776.
Got it. Congratulations, Dave. You're qualified. Okay, 65% of Americans can't explain what happened at the Constitutional Convention. That's a funny one.
They wrote a constitution,
yeah. 65% of Americans. You know, I thought the answer was there in the question.
Yeah. It was filled out.
Did they do something with a constitution at the Constitutional Convention? Yeah, that would have been a pretty good answer. Okay, 65% of Americans couldn't answer that one. 88% of Americans can't name a single writer of the Federalist Papers. That's a little tougher.
That one's a little tougher. Yeah, James Madison.
Yeah, I'd go Madison right away.
He would be the big one.
Yeah. 80% can't name the president during World War I. Okay? That's where it gets a little more difficult. That would be President
Wilson?
Yeah. President Wilson.
I said that without a lot of confidence.
Woodrow Wilson.
But understand, I was public schooled and
pregnant,
I'm still recovering.
For a moment. It's scaring me.
I'm recovering from my public education.
Well, 80% of Americans didn't know Woodrow Wilson.
And much better at 1776.
40% can't name our enemies in World War II. That's good for you. You can handle that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Germany.
Yeah. Japan.
German, and I was raised in Japan, so that helps.
Italy for a short time.
73% don't know that we were fighting communism during the Cold War.
What do you think we were fighting? Global warming?
I guess so. Okay. 61% don't know that a senator's term is 6 years. That's pretty lousy. Okay, 86% can't tell you how many representatives there are on the House of Representatives. I mean, that's 86%. That's a lot.
That is a lot, but I can't tell you off the top of my head. Okay. There's a lot of them.
It's 435. Okay, 70% don't know what is the supreme law of the land. Would you know what the supreme law of the land is?
I'd get this wrong because I would qualify and say God's law is the supreme law of the land.
Right.
But the Constitution is the
that would be the intent,
manifestation of man's law.
Okay. 67% don't know what type of economic system we officially have in the United States. And I'm not sure any of us know.
Broken?
Yeah, a very, very broken economic system.
I mean, officially.
Exactly. Well, friends, that's pretty much America. Not really really connected with what's going on. And I think typically what these surveys tell people is that why in the world are these people voting? That's typically where they're going. And that's where this story went, Newsweek magazine. They said, you know, Americans are all concerned about the budget. They want less government. 70% of Americans want less government. But he says, hey, if 70% of Americans want less government, then how do we do that when you've got 74% of Americans who don't want to cut Social Security, 70% don't want to cut Medicaid, and 81% don't want to cut Medicare? So now what? If you want less government, and government consists of this, 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 and this, and you don't want to cut this, 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 and this. He says, well, apparently Americans are idiots when it comes to their political positions.
Oh, that's not very nice. Yeah. They're not their idiots.
Basically what these guys
they're
are saying.
They're addicts. I think that's a better way of putting it. It's like the heroin addict who would like to be straight, but he doesn't want to go through the withdrawal. There's that period that's going to be very, very difficult for the heroin addict. He's going to have a few nights that are going to be very miserable. Or the alcoholic. You know, an alcoholic wants to be straight, but he doesn't want to go through the period of withdrawal and learning the discipline of a straight life. And that's where America is. I think we would desire to be free from the drug of socialism. We just don't want to go through the pain and the process to get there.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, education obviously not doing a whole lot for the average American, as in 75-80% of them are having a hard time with really basic questions regarding the history and the political systems that run this country. And no surprise there, I think, as far as I'm concerned. No real big surprise there. Hopefully we're doing better in our homeschools, Dave.
Well, I think we are.
I would hope so.
I would think we are. You know, for instance, in our homeschools, we can actually talk about the founders and the framers, and when they mention God, we don't have to pretend they didn't.
Yeah.
There are some public schools that are forbidden from teaching anything with the word God in it, especially from our founders.
Well, speaking of homeschooling, another article here. I'm not sure where this is from, but here's an article. Oh, this is, I think this is AP. This is AP story. Little six-year-old girl from Lake Ridge, Virginia, she won the state spelling bee.
She's 6 years old.
6 years old. She won the state spelling bee. Never guess what kind of education this girl received from her parents. Oh, I just gave it away tonight. She was homeschooled. She was homeschooled. She's been reading since she was two. Her mother tried a private school. She says, ah, forget that. The school just wasn't working for her. So the headmaster of the school said, you know, yeah, I just homeschool her. So the mother started homeschooling her.
We all know that doesn't work. She's not socialized. I know she's not socialized.
She's got to be badly socialized. Yeah.
She probably can spell it, though.
Lori Ann Madison is 6 years of age. She won the spelling bee in Virginia. She's heading to the National Spelling Bee. Wouldn't it be interesting if she won, the six-year-old? I mean, this gal's probably half the size of everybody else standing up in front in the state or national spelling bees. And wouldn't it be fun if she won?
It would be great. Fun, but and some judge would probably throw her in jail for missing too much school time for spelling bees or something.
Yeah, Judge Moriarty. Yeah, he'd probably do that to her. Well, friends, hey, you know, homeschoolers are actually doing very well in academics. And we point that out all the time. We point that out constantly. And granted, there's the minus three sigmas. And we always remind people, yeah, there's a few minus three standard deviations out there. And there are people who can fail at homeschooling. And homeschooling is not the panacea for all things. And we qualify, and we qualify, and we qualify. But when it really comes down to it, hey, homeschoolers on a very, very, very large sample size, doing up around the 86th to 89th percentile in math and reading and spelling and that sort of thing. And that's some 35, 40 percentile points above the national average. Dave, that's so significant. And yet 95% of American public school administrators say any form of education is better than homeschooling.
Right, because you might have boys like mine who are out helping people.
Yeah.
That would be bad socialization.
Yeah.
I should point out that, like, my 14-year-old, he's 14.
Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Daniel is he should be taking calculus next year when he's 15 because he's completed everything up till then.
See, it's the principle of individuality.
He's doing very well in math.
Yeah.
When it comes to spelling, though, the six-year-old could spell circles around him because he shows his creativity.
Yeah.
He's an original speller, which isn't very good when it comes to spelling.
Yeah.
But he does really well at math. And this is what you find out with homeschooling is that when a child is good at something, they can run. They can run fast. They can far outdistance what would happen if a whole class was holding them back. And when they're not very good at something, we can remediate. We can work on that for a long period of time. You know, there are some boys who don't learn to read until they're 10 years old.
Or 13 or 14.
And then all of a sudden they become one of the framers of the country?
Before you know it, they're Patrick Henry, Thomas Edison. Yeah, that's what happens to kids who are out of the box. We encourage parents to get kids out of the box. There's nothing in the Bible that requires a 14-year-old kid to be reading Plato. Nothing in the Bible regarding that. In fact, actually, the Bible warns you about reading some of these Greek philosophers. The Greek philosophy is something that Paul frowns on in Colossians chapter 1, Colossians chapter 2, and 1 Corinthians. But that aside, friends, the principle of individuality is important. Let's respect it. Let's respect it. Let's respect it. You ask my kids, what grade are you in? They give you that blank stare. They don't know what grade they're in.
What do you mean, what grade am I in?
Grade? What do you mean, grade? You know, and then you got to step in there and say, ma'am, he's 13 years old. He's in calculus next year, so back off.
Right. You know, our house is on about a 13% grade. That's
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, it really doesn't matter. What we have is we have children who are learning to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. They're learning to take dominion. They're all at various stages. Everybody is at a various stage. When you get out of high school, I just came from a high school graduation. It was interesting. These were homeschool graduates, and it's good to recognize that they put in a number of years of work. Mm-hmm. But I kept wanting to say that now the work really starts in earnest. And now your studying is more important and more pointed towards your area of dominion, and you're never going to stop learning. This homeschool thing, this was just the starting line.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a different theory of education. It's just, I mean, friends, and we better get back to some of the basic principles. Principle of individuality, we've talked about that today. The principle of life integration, actually applying the things you learn to, like, real life, and knowing how to use the things that you've learned to do stuff. I mean, these are basic principles for the education of a child. And so many people are completely unaware of these things. Now, of course, they are in the Bible, but I summarize them in my book, Upgrade the 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child. And I think every single parent in America needs to look into the education of their children. They need to know something about the basic principles, and they need to go find the best way to bring about these principles in the education of their own children, if they care about their kids. Because, friends, just tossing them into the public schools is not the right solution. That's not the right solution. You can't just toss them in the public schools and everything's going to turn out well in 18 years. Ain't going to happen. So get my book, Upgrade, the 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child, and get a clue. You know, ask yourself the questions. How am I putting together an education that aligns with these basic, time-tested principles? And those principles are in the Word of God. So if you want to read the Bible, just do that. You don't need to buy the book.
It's not even so much education. I'm not even comfortable with the word anymore. It sort of feels very humanisty for the other system.
Yeah.
What we're doing, we're raising children in nurture and admonition of the Lord.
Yeah.
You're a homeschooled child. In fact, your dad is still homeschooling you from afar.
Yeah.
He sends you homework all the time. I noticed that he's constantly giving you reading assignments.
You saw my email this morning, yeah. Six more emails, yeah. He just keeps connecting with me.
So I don't think you're ever going to be done with your homeschooling, I don't think your son will ever be done with homeschooling either, because this is a lifelong pursuit. That is the nurture.
My son's 20 years of age, and this morning we were talking about Karl Marx. We went through the Communist Manifesto together, and he was reading from the Communist Manifesto this morning. My son was being educated this morning in my home. Now, granted, someday he'll have his own home, but hopefully at that point he'll continue to be educated, as you said. Well, friends, we're going to wrap up the program. We're out of time. But if you'd like to interact with the program, just email me at host@kevinswanson.com. If you like the program, you want to support the program, remember right now we're going through our annual fundraising campaign. In just a couple weeks, we're going to be out of this thing, and you won't hear about it for another 11 months. But for right now, you need to hear about what we're doing. We're trying to keep this program on the air. And we have editing costs, we have production costs, we have IT costs. We are doing our best to keep this on the air. Now, we're a lean, mean machine, a really lean, mean machine. We reach tens of thousands of people, and we don't pay the big, big bucks on AM and FM channels. We go through the Internet, and we're advertising on WorldNet Daily right now, just trying to get a few more dads and a few more moms and a few more families tuning in to our message on faith, family, and freedom on this radio station, which is really my little basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Now, if you want to fund this shoestring budget, you get behind us. We need 100 people to say, yeah, I'll do the $10. The $10 a month to make this thing work. And or if you wanted $20 or $100, that's fine too. But if you can contribute to the program, we'd appreciate it. Just go to our website and hit give. Hit the give button. And the website is generationsradio.com. Go to generationsradio.com and hit the give today. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
I have always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trusteth to the book called the Scriptures, thou trusteth to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of the Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.